Robert Zoellick has had quite the career so far. He was president of the World Bank. He served in a number of presidential administrations, and he's a senior fellow at Harvard University's Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs. Now he has a new book out called America in the World, A History of U.S. Diplomacy and Foreign Policy. And in it, he defines five traditions that have shaped our diplomacy: the continent of North America, trade, transnationalism, and technology, alliances and order, public and congressional support, and America's purpose. Robert Zoellick joins us on Skype. And which of those five traditions do you think is the most important for American diplomacy?
Well, I think they all have to come together. You know, you can't do it without public support. I think that in the end of the day, America does exist not only for what we do at home, but also trying to shape the global environment. That's the purpose in the world. You can't do it unless you've got a strong North American base. And what's interesting is many foreign policy people ignore that. They kind of just assume our relations are with Europe and Asia, but having a strong continental base will be important in our role in the world. Trade and economic relations is fundamental to partnerships and private sector role. And alliances is the story of the past 70 years. So I really feel that they have to be fit together.
In reading this book, you look back at people like Ben Franklin, the country's first diplomat, Alexander Hamilton, Thomas Jefferson, Monroe, Wilson. How much do you think that their ideals, and let's just talk about the founding fathers, how much do their ideals still shape American diplomacy and foreign policy today?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because insofar as people talk about America's history in the world, they tend to focus only on the post-World War II period or that's afterwards. There's a lot of interesting ideas and experience from the first 150 years. So when I look at each of these individuals, each one I try to associate with a perspective. So for Hamilton, it's the role of economic statecraft. Mm-hmm. With Franklin, it's a wonderful story, if you think about it, about moving from war to peace, the challenge of working with allies in Congress. So one of the points of this book is I try to go beyond the intellectual frameworks that are often debated and talk about the practical work of diplomacy. And I try to add my insights from my experience or how I read events based on that. And I think many of those experiences from those earlier periods still offer guidance today.
Well, let's talk about some events today. What do you make of diplomacy in the Trump administration? Because whether it is China or Iran or North Korea, we've talked to experts who say he doesn't have a strategy, that he's making it up as he goes along. He often says when he's asked about bad behavior of an adversary that we've done bad things too. There were the meetings with Kim Jong-un that haven't yielded what was promised, his meeting with Putin in Helsinki, in which he didn't confront him about election interference. He's insulted allies. What do you make of it? What do you make of his diplomatic strategy and diplomatic record?
Trump's style, as you see in his presidency in general, is very transactional. So therefore, it doesn't focus much on building economic arrangements or alliances or long-term institutions for America's influence. It's very personal. It's narcissistic, and other players, including authoritarian ones, are able to play into that. In many ways, I think it's a reflection of his domestic political base. So if you think about it, you know, the wall with Mexico, his anti-immigration policy, that's a core signal to his supporters. And similarly on trade, he's really the first protectionist president we've had since Herbert Hoover. And that's a signal to his political base. I suppose the other quality is that he wants to be very different from his predecessors. He's kind of the anti-historical president. So whether it's the Bushes or whether it's Obama, he has to be different. So I think that's one reason why the book might be, while historical, offer some insights for where we go from here, because in some ways, Trump has been the disruptor.
Well, on the issue of trade, do you think that tariffs can be a good lever for diplomacy? He's not the first president to use them.
Yeah, it depends if your goal is to lower tariffs or not. But, you know, Trump in his inaugural said he was a protectionist. That's a pretty good hint. And then on top of that, he said he's a tariff man. So if you take, say, the relationship with China, after 3.5 years, he finally negotiated sort of a purchasing package agreement. And really, they're only about halfway to sort of the targets they set. He didn't change the rules. He didn't try to open the markets more effectively. And the tariffs are still in place. But equally so, you know, claiming that Canada's a national security threat to raise aluminum tariffs, this just raises costs for Americans and frankly hurts our exporters, farmers, others, and hurts our role in the world.
What would you advise on the issue of China? Because no matter who wins the election here in November, the president is going to have to figure out what the U.S. relationship with China is going to be. It's the most populous country on earth, and soon it will be the richest.
When President Xi took office in 2012, he created a documentary film about the end of the Soviet Union, and he ordered all the party cadres to see it. Now, if such a film were shown in Europe, Gorbachev would be the hero that helped end the Cold War. Well, the Chinese version is fundamentally different. Gorbachev is the fool who abandoned the Communist Party, led to ruin in his country, and the not-so-subtle message is it's not going to happen here. The Cold War, which is a historical event for most Americans, casts a very long shadow in China, and it's important to understand that. Having said that, I think I would start by working closely with my allies, which Trump has not done. In the past months, we've had this verbal attack that I think has led to quite a serious freefall or quite danger in that sort of relationship. And I would go back to the pragmatism that I talked about in the book, which is what do you want to accomplish here? If you take intellectual property rights, which are discussed, China's created intellectual property rights courts. They're actually giving a lot of awards to foreign companies now, but the penalties aren't high enough. In the case of Hong Kong, if we want to send a serious message, well, maybe we should allow people from Hong Kong to come to the U.S. That would show the difference between the two systems. So In a complex relationship like China, you're better off if you're working with our allies and, frankly, people within China who see the need for change. I think the administration's policy is largely based on their political desire to have an enemy in the election.
America's purpose is one of the traditions you talked about. There's always been this idea of American exceptionalism, of America as a shining city on a hill, a beacon of hope for the world. Do you think that that still exists today? And, you know, there are a lot of things going on and there are a lot of, you know, news events that have happened that would make people question that. But just look at the coronavirus right now. We've got, you know, 50,000 plus cases a day in the United States and, you know, a few hundred in a lot of the European countries. We don't seem to be a shining city on the hill when it comes to how we've handled the coronavirus.
Well, Jeremy, I distinguish a little bit between exceptionalism and purpose. But I do think that whether it was a case of a founding republic, whether it was preserving the union, whether it was Wilson's idea about making the world safe for democracy, or the role that we played as the leader for the free world in the Cold War, that is part of kind of the American spirit. Now, your point is an excellent one, which is has to start at home. The basic model that we send to the world is not necessarily what we tell others. It's how we represent ourselves. And that's not been a good story recently. However, what I often tell people abroad is, you know, you can't just look at the White House. America is a society of people and organizations, you know, so it's the Gates Foundation working on coronavirus, second biggest funder in the WHO. It's even the Federal Reserve, which has done an amazing job with this swaps program in the process of the global financial crisis or now. It's the SpaceX for this summer as well as other things. So I believe There's a resiliency in America. And the question is how our leadership and how our people sort of reshape that for challenges such as biological security, inclusive economic growth, environmental and energy security, data security, but also opportunities. I believe it's possible, but that's one of the things that America's debating.
You were in the George W. Bush administration. How do you look back on diplomacy with regards to the Iraq war? Because many would say we didn't exhaust all the diplomatic options before going in and didn't have a true coalition.
To give you the context, I was the U.S. trade representative during that time. So I was working on the trade and economic issues and creating free trade agreements. But I think the context I would say is, number one, I think historians will look back on 9/11 and recognize that of the anxiety it created for President Bush 43 and those around him. Second, I don't believe President Bush would have gone to war except for his belief that Iraq did have nuclear weapons. That leads to, I think, a third important issue, which is your role of intelligence agencies. And this will be much debated, but I personally think it's very important to have your intelligence agencies be independent and willing to be straight and be the unpopular person in the room. Because clearly there was a mistake there. Some would argue it was pushed from the administration on the intelligence agencies. But I think that's what led to what became a very long and difficult and tragic war and conflict. And then there's the question, which I also deal with through the book, is that, you know, it's one thing to fight a war. It's another thing to try to reach peace, going back to my story with Ben Franklin.
That is Robert Zoellick, former president of the World Bank, has held a number of government positions during a number of administrations, and he's the author of the new book, America in the World, A History of U.S. Diplomacy and Foreign Policy. Robert Zoellick, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Jeremy. Enjoyed it.
And you can find an excerpt from the book at hereandnow.org.